In the 1990s, many states, including Michigan, began getting tough on juvenile crime. That meant harsher sentencing and sending more youth to adult prisons. Between 2003 and 2013, Michigan sent thousands of youth under the age of 18 to serve time in adult prisons, but many are beginning to question the effectiveness of those tough-on-crime policies. Advocates for reform say that sending a young person to an adult prison can have devastating consequences, and many are calling for more rehabilitative options for youth who enter the juvenile justice system. Those options are the topic of Youth Beyond Bars, a forum being hosted in Lansing tomorrow by the Michigan Council on Crime and Delinquency. Joining us to talk about potential reforms for Michigan's juvenile justice system is one of the forum's guest speakers. T.J. Parcell is a writer and activist who was himself incarcerated in an adult prison in Michigan at the age of 17. Welcome, T.J.
Thank you, Mark.
Also joining us, Francisco Villarruel, a professor of family and child ecology at Michigan State University and a researcher into the juvenile justice system. Welcome, Dr. Villarruel.
Thank you very much.
Francisco, the U.S. began sending young people to adult prisons in larger numbers in the 1990s as part of these tough-on-crime policies. Adult time for adult crime was kind of the buzzword at that time. How did those laws come about? What was the motivation for getting tougher?
There are actually multiple motivations, and it's difficult to put a nail on the one issue. But the case that really turned the tide of public reform and public sentiment was the Central Park jogger case. That case, as you may remember, was an instance where four African-American and one Latino youth were tried and convicted for sexual assault, riot, rape, and robbery, as well as attempted murder. Each of the adjudicated youth received a sentence of 5 to 15 years while at the time claiming their innocence. In 2002, a person confessed and was shown to be the perpetrator of this crime through DNA analysis. But there are two points that are important to recognize here. This case resulted in a public response where people began to call youth juvenile super predators. There was a fear that youth were becoming uncontrollable, that crimes were becoming more and more heinous, and that the only way to address this would be to incarcerate youth and focus on issues of public safety.
Mm-hmm. Talk to us about the impact of those policies from your perspective.
I think there are a number of issues that we can look at. Prior to 2004, the Roper v. Simmons case in the Supreme Court, we had youth who were actually convicted of crimes and were sentenced to death. The Roper v. Simmons case actually found that the death sentence for juveniles was unconstitutional. States then began to move to life without parole. Three states, Michigan, Florida, and Pennsylvania, accounted for approximately 84% of all of the youth in the United States who have been sentenced to life without parole. Now we can fast forward to 2009, when we begin to see Supreme Court cases again contesting the constitutionality of life without parole.
Mm-hmm. TJ, this issue is obviously extremely personal for you. You were sent to an adult prison as a 17-year-old. Tell us about how that experience informs your activism in 2015.
Well, I was 17 years old, and I robbed a photomat with a toy gun. It was a serious crime. Though I was in prison in the late 1970s, I think the courts were beginning, even at that point, to crack down on youth crime. The judge wasn't amused that it was a toy gun, and in fact, under Michigan law, it didn't matter that it was a toy gun. So the crime I committed was serious, and I was sent to an adult prison. I spent from 17 to 21 in the Michigan Department of Corrections. I was a young, skinny, good-looking kid, and I didn't last 24 hours in general population. Some older inmates spiked my drink with Thorazine, a heavy sedative they gave the mentally ill prisoners, and I was gang-raped. Mm. Sadly, that is very common for young people in adult prisons. The BJS studies have shown that youth in adult facilities are up to six times more likely to be sexually abused.
More common today than it was even in the late 80s?
Yes. I think youth in adult facilities represent one of the most vulnerable populations to sexual abuse. And not just sexual abuse. I mean, they're 36 times more likely to commit suicide. But, you know, inmates view youthful offenders as, you know, prime targets. I think all you need to do is go on a college campus and look at the difference between the freshmen and the sophomore or the seniors. Mm-hmm. You know, the young men that come into the system as young as 17, and if they've been transferred, they can come in earlier. But the young males, they're more androgynous looking, their skin's softer, and they're very naive. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the inmates take advantage of them.
Francisco, what's your take on this?
Just to build on what TJ is saying, the JJDPA, the Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Act, requires that any facility that has a youth under the age of 18 has a sight and sound separation for these individuals. How that has been translated into practice is that these youth are being put into solitary confinement for 23 hours. So if you want to talk about contributing to mental health issues, that isolation, which is actually protection, may in fact exacerbate some of the mental health issues. And when we have re-entry into communities, we now have additional support that is needed for these juveniles.
Francisco Villarruel is a professor of family and child ecology at Michigan State University. We're talking about what advocates say is a need for reform in the state's juvenile justice system. Also with us, TJ Parcell, an activist for prison reform who was put in an adult prison in Michigan when he was 17. Francisco, was there a reduction in youth crime in Michigan or around the country after these tough-on-crime policies were enacted? Did it appear that they were working ever?
The ironic thing is that juvenile crime over the last 20 years has steadily decreased, and there's no particular correlation with the tough-on-crime legislation that has been enacted across the state.
That's without dispute? I mean, are there people who would disagree with you on that? Or?
There are always people that will dispute, but we can find no direct correlation. One way to consider this, we look at states with the death penalty. There is no direct correlation with felony murder with states who have the death penalty.
Okay. Yeah, TJ?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, the Supreme Court in several of these recent decisions where they've chosen to no longer sentence youth to life without parole or eliminating death penalty for youth under 18, they all recognize that there's an inherent difference in youth versus adults. Mm-hmm. The brain studies have shown that their brains have not developed fully. The parts of the brain that comprehend long-term consequences. I think youth are much more impressionable, and there's a greater opportunity to impact these young people in an early age, but not in the adult system. Now, the sight and sound separation provision came out of the Prison Rape Elimination Act, but not all states have adopted those, and many of the counties have not adopted those. So youth that are even arrested and put in county lockups, even before housing decisions are made, are housed with adult prisons, mm-hmm. prisoners. And, you know, I mean, much of my work has been around prison sexual violence. This is, you know, Sexual Awareness Month, April, but I think that it's important to kind of note that the culture inside of our adult prisons is a very violent culture, and youth don't belong there. Mm-hmm. And it's not just people that are actually raped, but it touches everybody, because in order to avoid rape, in order to fend off the threat of rape, you have to become hyper-masculine and hyper-violent. And so we put these young people in the prison system where they are forced to operate in a certain way, and they're there for however long they're there. And then when they come back out into our communities, we expect them to be normal.
Did you try to make that adjustment? Did you induce this process of hypermasculinity as a response to your early
experience? It would have been futile for me. I weighed 158 pounds. I was not tough. I wasn't street smart. I wasn't affiliated with any gangs. And the inmates saw me when I got off the bus. I was raped on day one. And when the inmates were done, they literally flipped a coin to decide which one of them were going to own me. So what I had to do for the balance of my time that I was in prison was I had to enter into a protective pairing. I had to get a man, somebody that was strong enough to protect me. And in exchange for that protection, I had to trade sexual favors. So what I had to do to survive while I was in there was to just learn how to use my sexuality as a source of power, as a commodity.
How long were you in?
I was in from 17 to 21. Now, you know, those are very critical formative years. I mean, at late adolescence, we're dealing with issues of identity, sexuality, separation from family, and trying to figure out where and how we fit in the world. And to place someone into this atmosphere, into this environment, where many of the definitions of those things like manhood and masculinity is greatly distorted. So I would tell you it's taken me a lifetime to recover from what I experienced during that time.
Francisco, what do recidivism rates look like for youth who end up in adult prisons?
They're actually worse for youth who go to adult prisons, and there are a number of reasons that are related to that. One has to do with the lack of quality educational programs. In adult prisons, there is no federal requirement or mandate for education, whereas in juvenile justice systems there are. There is also no mental health counseling that's available in adult prisons on a regular basis to youth, as opposed to in the juvenile justice system where it's part of the programming. We can put this in economic costs, which is something that your listeners may appreciate. We know that in the state of Michigan, for example, we appropriate approximately $12,000 on an annual basis for students in school. The average daily cost for incarcerating a youth in Michigan is approximately $475 per day, which equates to approximately $173,000 per year.
TJ, how would continue? You wanted to respond.
I was in prison in the late 1970s, as I mentioned, and there was more of an emphasis on rehabilitation in those days than there are today. Now, I was fortunate in that I finished my high school when I was in prison, and I was able to finish a year and a half of college. Studies have shown that inmates who receive even just some college in while they're incarcerated, their rates of recidivism are less than half of all other populations. So it's one of the few programs that has worked, but sadly we've eliminated a lot of those kinds of programs, which I think highlights the point of why youth should be put in juvenile facilities where there is much more emphasis on rehabilitation. You know, I think that, you know, I mean, I've been out of prison for 35 years. I've not gone back. I've been very productive. And, you know, I'm grateful for the education that was started for me while I was in prison. But we don't do enough of that. And youth just do not belong in adult prisons.
We have less than a minute. Francisco, do you feel that public opinion on this matter is shifting?
I think public opinion shifted several years ago. There really is a public outcry for placing youth in adult facilities, yet our policy and our legislatures have continued to support this under the aegis of safer communities.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you feel about that, TJ?
Well, I think the important thing to note is that 95% of all prisoners are eventually released, and they're coming back into our communities indelibly marked by what they've experienced inside. So you send these youth into this atmosphere where they have to become hypermasculine and hyperviolent. They're coming back out with that mindset that's sort of imprinted in their psyche. And so this is everybody's issue.
We want to thank our guests. We've been talking about calls for reform to the juvenile justice system in Michigan. Our guests today have been TJ Parcell, a writer, activist, and former juvenile inmate at a Michigan correctional facility. TJ will be talking about his experiences tomorrow at the Youth Beyond Bars Forum put on by the Michigan Council on Crime and Delinquency. Also, Francisco Villarruel, a professor of family and child ecology at Michigan State University and an expert on the juvenile justice system. Thanks to both of you. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.